And then, you guessed it, he smiles.
Dane. I'd suggest a Myers-Briggs test to see if our personalities are compatible, but I think it's safe to say you're an extrovert, she says, tone communicating her annoyance perfectly. I was a psych major. I know exactly what a Myers-Briggs test is. It doesn't mean she needs to know that. This wouldn't be half as much fun if she didn't underestimate me. This woman is not what I was expecting when Ethan suggested his baby-making scheme. When he said a friend of his was interested in co-parenting a child and nothing more, I jumped at the chance. My prayers answered. A woman not interested in anything other than a platonic business arrangement? Sign me up. I pictured an unattractive woman, somewhat older, smelling of desperation. Nothing like this. This little thing with dark hair and big eyes? She's no Christie, but she's attractive. Is that one of them squiggly-lined picture tests? I'ma tell you right now, they all look like boobs to me. As soon as we sat down, she fished a pair of reading glasses out of her bag and put them on. As far as ugly goes, these are the granddaddy of ugly. But those clear blue-green eyes of hers framed by those ugly-as-fuck glasses are something special. She blinks. Blinks again. Her expression is priceless. I almost wish I had a keepsake.
Save it for your groupies, Mr. Wilder. The dumb beefcake act won't work on me. I've seen your IQ score.
You have?
It's right here in your dossier.
She taps a short red nail on the screen of her iPad. And a perfect wonderlick.
Excuse me?
I take it you ain't a football fan? At the word ain't, she grimaces. I bite back the urge to chuckle.
You would be correct.
Across the table, she hands me a manila folder.
Here's my dossier.
Dossier? Taking it, I flip it up and down. You mean a file? I get a not-so-subtle glare in return. This woman does not like me. A first. So then why does another undeniable smile split my face? Don't know. But what I do know is that this is the most fun I've had in a long time. Her irritation clears, and once again she's looking down her cute nose at the screen. Her eyes widen. She glances up from the tablet she's abusing and skewers me with those baby blues. I can't wait to see what comes out of that pretty mouth next.
It says here you've had 1,000 sexual partners?
Her voice holds equal amounts of shock and disbelief.
That can't be right.
Damn, she's cute when she's confused.
It's a typo, right?
That's classified information, I bark, feigning anger like a champ. She rolls her eyes and I barely manage to stop the laughter wanting to rip out of me. How'd you get that number?
Research, otherwise known as Google, so it's obviously not classified.
Pure bullshit propagated by past teammates, but why mess with the legend, right? Besides, most women, even the most bloodthirsty predators, balk at such a number. They move on to dumber pastures in their hunt for a husband, and that spells victory for me. And if there's one thing I love above all else, it's winning. Give or take a few hundred. She eyeballs me, mentally gearing up for a debate. Men have been underestimating women since the dawn of time. Not me. I choose the red pill. Make no mistake, they are the smarter sex. The idea that men rule the world is a lie spoon-fed to us by the females of the species, a conspiracy to control the masses. Keep the suckers fat and happy, thinking they're in charge, when someone else is pulling puppet strings from behind the curtain. Not this sucker. Ain't no one pulling my strings. Her lips shape into a smug smile. She laces her fingers together. She has nice hands, long tapered fingers. One minute I'm staring at her hands, and the next I'm picturing those hands wrapped around. She coughs. My eyes climb back up to her face where I find her wearing a determined little scowl.
If this is going to work, honesty is of the utmost importance. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. Though I highly doubt any woman is capable of keeping that promise for longer than a 24-hour period.
And you expect me to believe you've had 1,000 sexual partners?
God, this is like fishing with dynamite. Sitting back, I cross my arms and give it a meaningful pause before answering, "Sweetheart, I was getting paid a lot of money to play football. I couldn't just give that up." She goes dead silent. Dang, if I knew how much fun this was gonna be, I'd have done it ages ago.
Stella. I glance at my cell, indicating my impatience to leave. "Well," I say, searching for an excuse for a speedy exit. I ordered the salad niçoise simply because I wanted to eat and end this torture as quickly as possible. I hadn't expected this clown to order the rest of the menu. I've never seen a human being consume so much food. I can't even imagine what his carbon footprint is. Throughout lunch, I said as little as possible while he pelted me over and over with inane questions. Why does he care if my tight ponytail gives me a headache? Or whether I always wear black? Or my favorite?
Are those glasses for show, or do you really need them?
And then there was this.
You're Puerto Rican.
American. I was born here. Half Cuban, if that's what you're asking. On my mother's side.
Right,
he said, like it's the same thing.
Is that a problem?
His face lit up with another sly grin.
Hell no, I like seasoning on my white meat.
I couldn't make this up if I tried. You would think he was dropped on his head as a baby. Alas, no. I've seen his IQ score with my own eyes, courtesy of one of my young analysts who knows how to get information. I didn't ask how, I only said thank you. I really need to head back to the office.
On a Saturday?
Oops. I have some research to do. Sounds legit, kind of. His greenish-brown eyes narrow. He motions for the bill. 10 awkward and silent minutes later, we're struggling for the bill folder.
Allow me.
He says, "I got it," I reply. Even though I put up a good fight, his grip is 1,000 times stronger. He eventually wins the hand-to-hand combat. Placing 3 crisp C notes down, he stands. I do the same, denying him the opportunity to pull my chair out. This earns me a rare frown.
You aren't going to wait for the change?
The bill was $150.32. I glanced at the total before it was unceremoniously ripped out of my hands.
Nope.
So here's the thing. I get a little anxious about money. Irrationally so, I readily admit. Being broke for as long as we were when I was growing up gives you a whole set of triggers. 20% would have been sufficient. 100% is being careless. And my next thought is he'll be broke by the time he reaches 50. Catching me conspicuously eyeballing the black folder, he says,
"You okay?"
My gaze snaps back to him. "Yeah, I'm great. Do you always tip that much?" He doesn't like the question. I know this because he wears his suspicion openly.
"Yeah, why?"
He'll be broke by the time he reaches 50. Just curious.
More research?
Yeah. His warm hand lands on my lower back as he walks me out. The gesture takes me by surprise. Instinctively, I lean forward and he gives me a queer look. Once we hit the sidewalk, people walking by us recognize him, some slowing their pace. We're about to get swarmed. A perfect opportunity for me to make a swift getaway. "Thank you for lunch, Mr. Wilder." He smirks. Apparently, he finds it hilarious that I would address him as such, because he's been giving me the same quirky smile throughout lunch. I've been racking my brain for the last hour trying to place who he reminds me of.
It was a pleasure, and I wish you luck in your endeavor.
He's obviously a fan of smiling, so I give him one. A super forced one.
I think we should have dinner sometime this week, to hammer out the details.
My mind draws a complete blank. I blink.
I blink some more,
taking my sweet time to ascertain whether I heard him correctly. Then I explode with laughter. In my mind, that is. In my mind, I'm rolling around on the ground in laughter.
I'm sorry. This isn't going to work.
He looks positively gobsmacked.
What do you mean it isn't going to work?
The syrupy drawl is gone, replaced by a much more tolerable version. You're not...
Wow, this is awkward.
What I'm looking for. Nice meeting you, though.
He looks offended, kind of. I must have hit a nerve.
I must have, because the lazy indifference is gone.
Yep, he's offended. Wow, that's rich. Talk about a sense of entitlement.
Bye. Without further ado, I take off down the narrow sidewalk of Prince Street. Unfortunately, he follows. I know this by the dark shadow he casts over me.
You think you know my character based on the two words we shared?
The scratchy baritone is closer than I want it to be, right over my shoulder to be precise. The taunt is enough to make me pause, however. Turning with a half-cocked eyebrow and smug knowledge glaringly obvious on my face, I make a show of staring at the black eye.
I know enough. Darling, let me spare you the embarrassment of having to apologize later. I'm what every woman wants.
And then he pats himself on the chest. Did I step into an alternate universe where men still said stupid shit like this? I would laugh at his audacity, but I don't want to encourage this knuckle-dragger.
Not this one.
Holding up a hand, I add, "Quick, somebody call Guinness World Records." All puffed up, he struts around me, stepping in my way. And that's when an old memory strikes and it dawns upon me. Who he reminds me of. Or better yet, what?
You don't know me well enough to say that.
Down the street, I spot a taxi with its light on. Desperate to get away, I flail both arms, except he keeps swaying in my way, blocking my line of sight, which is not hard to do if one is the size of a woolly mammoth.
Listen up, Foghorn Leghorn. I can assure you that you are not even remotely close to what I want. Now kindly step out of my way.
The taxi comes to a hard stop at the curb, screeching tires and everything. I step around Foghorn, who seems to be in the midst of a serious internal debate, his expression frozen in the bewildered position, and reach for the door handle.
Gramercy Park, I bark at the driver as I slip into the back seat of the cab.
Before we take off, I hear a deep male voice yell,
"The Matrix called. They want their wardrobe back."
Whatever. Tapping on the screen of my cell, I pull up my spreadsheet.
Chapter 5. Dane. Foghorn Leghorn? I don't do anger. That's not how I roll. Not when I had no fuzz on my peaches. Not even when I was playing professional football. Heck. Taunting them with gratitude was always more effective. On the field, every hit was answered with a tip of the imaginary hat or a handshake. And if it was a particularly nasty tackle, it was either, "Damn, baby, if you want a dry hump, buy me dinner first." Or, my personal favorite, "I get hard as fuck every time you touch me, sugar. Hold me closer next time." That one usually got stunned looks followed by angry stares. The next hit, however, was always less violent. Occasionally, I got the once-over and an invitation to drinks, which I turned down with a wink and a promise that if I ever let my rainbow flag fly, he'd be the first call I made. but I never reacted in anger. Until now. Foghorn Leghorn? A cartoon character? Hell no, hell no. This pint-sized porcupine has gotten under my skin in the worst way. On the way back to my fat boy, my cell phone rings, my father's name flashing on the screen. What's up, Dad?
My word, you're in a sweet mood. What happened? Some girl dump you?
Leave it to dear old Dad to find the bullet hole and pour salt in it. First off, I haven't dated girls since junior high. I date women. And bite your tongue, if anyone's doing the dumping, it's me.
I didn't call to do a Dear Abby session, son. Your business is your business.
Bullshit. My father's the nosiest man I know. If there's family gossip, we all find out from him.
We need to discuss the ranch, he says,
any amusement present in his voice a moment ago, now absent. I think it's time to sail, I say as gently as possible. I know how sensitive he is about it. This is the only topic he and I argue about. Carson is willing to buy the land without the house. You won't have to move, and you won't have the expense of keeping it up. We can sell off what's left of the stock. The horses can stay.
What about Levi?
Levi's got plans of his own, but I can't tell him that. That's Levi's burden to deal with. He's got enough saved to do whatever he wants.
No.
No.
I'm saving it for George's girls. George's girls are 6 and nothing.
We ain't keeping the ranch for the next 15 years to find out later they don't want it. My sister's pregnant with her second girl. She and her husband, a Navy pilot, are living in San Diego. The last thing they all want to do is go back to ranch living, which is a hell of a lot harder than people understand. Something occurs to me then. Now what about my kids? How do you know my kids won't want it?
Your kids?
Yeah, mine.
Is this a joke? I'm being serious, Dane. Stop fooling around.
Stop fooling around? What the... What are you saying, Dad?
What I'm saying, son, is that if I have to wait to hand this ranch over to your kids, I'll be waiting till the end of time.
You don't think I'll have kids? There's an uncomfortable pause. He exhales.
You're not the type.
My temper sparks again for the second time today. We've never discussed this before. I assumed my own father was in my corner. It never occurred to me he didn't think I could handle it. What the hell does that mean?
It means that part of you is a lot like your mama. It's impossible for you to commit to something long term. A miracle how long you stuck with football.
He might as well have hit me upside the head with a brick. His words stopped me cold in my tracks.
Dane, you still there?
I'm speechless, hurt and speechless. Comparing me to my mother is just about the worst insult he could have thrown at me. A betrayal. The last thing I thought I would ever hear come from my father's lips. People move past me. Some pause to take a second look. In this city, it's almost impossible not to be recognized. My face is plastered on billboards all along the West Side Highway and the local papers. In no mood to deal with fans, eyes cast down, I head back to my bike. I change my mind, Dad. We're not selling the ranch. I gotta go. Before he can respond, I end the call. 2 days later, my anger is still on low simmer. I lay awake for 2 nights weighing the pros and cons, and then I called one of my best buds.
He's not entirely wrong, sweetheart.
I swear Noah Callahan was born to bust my balls.
What do you mean, asshole? You siding with my pops?
A heavy sigh comes through the phone.
Football is the only thing you've ever committed to. He's right about that. And being a parent is nothing like football. It'll be a long time before it gets fun. We're talking sacrificing your personal life for a decade or more. You ready for that?
I give his words the consideration they're due. Noah, Jermaine, and I have been a triple threat since kindergarten, and the only ones I can always count on to give me the ugly truth. Aside from all the ribbon, his and Jermaine's are the opinions I value most. I can't consult J-Bear, because I know where his head's at. He's got 5 already. No, I needed an unbiased perspective. That's why Noah. He's eternally single for an entirely different reason than mine, and therefore a neutral sounding board. All I've ever had is a personal life. I'm damn sick of it. Practically explodes out of me. Even I'm taken aback by the force of my words. I'm ready for more. I want the family, minus the woman telling me what to do every minute of every day before she tells me she's leaving because she's feeling neglected. And I thought my situation was hopeless. If you've got your heart set on it, then do it. This woman sounds like a good bet, and there never was a woman born that you couldn't sweet-talk with baby cakes. I'm sure she'll come around. His confidence in my abilities immediately elicits images of the little porcupine, as I've come to think of her. This is going to be harder than he realizes. She called me. I probably shouldn't, probably a bad idea. Called you what, handsome? Quit it, will you? This is serious. Fine. What'd she call you, Dane? It ain't going to be easy to convince her, is all I'm saying. What did she call you? I got to get back to work. Foghorn Leghorn. Silence. Painful silence. Succeeded by an explosion of laughter. An eternity later, he settles. Woo-wee! I do like this woman. This is definitely the one, Dane. No chance in hell this one is ever going to fall for your ugly mug. He's right. This woman is exactly the kind I need to mother my child. There isn't a single chance she'll develop any feelings for me. Except irritation, that is. She's clearly not looking for marriage because she's a female, which makes her cunning and crafty. And if she wanted to be married, she would be. And something about her, probably her generally uptight attitude, tells me she is rock solid. This is a woman that sees her tasks through come hell or high water. Thanks for the pep talk, asshole. You coming home anytime soon? When his inquiry is met with silence, he sighs loudly. Didn't think so. Later, boo. My mind made up, it was time to execute my plan. That being to convince the porcupine to give me another chance. After some not-so-gentle verbal arm-twisting, Ethan eventually gives me her work address. I've been camped out front of her building since noon. By 4, it started raining. By 6, I'm soaked and in dire need of a piss break. That's when I see her black hair slicked back in a tight bun coming through the revolving doors. Alleluia, I may not catch pneumonia. As soon as I take off my helmet, the only way I could avoid being recognized, she immediately spots me. Her expression does a couple of flips. From surprise to irritation to anger, and back to irritation. I smile. She frowns and makes a hard right, taking off down the street at a steady clip, her short legs moving quicker than I'd anticipated. She's wearing a black suit again. It seems the only thing the woman wears is black, so she's easy to tell. My eyes move down, looking for the swell of her heart-shaped ass beneath that shapeless suit, and get nothing. In seconds, the rain goes from a steady shower to torrential downpour. All at once, umbrellas of every color pop up. I almost lose her in the crowd. Her stature allows her to make sharp cuts through the congested sidewalk. Mine doesn't. Not unless I want to end up mowing down a couple of folks. Breaking into a jog, I finally catch up and step in her path. She makes an abrupt stop, and some dude almost plows into her from behind. I reach out in time to block him. For this kindness, I'm rewarded with an eye roll and a none-too-pleased look on her face. What's the rush, shorty? Her eyebrows shoot up. Okay, maybe not the best start. What do you want, Wilder? I'd love for you to call me Dane. I smile again, trying to loosen that stranglehold she's got on Happy. But it ain't working. This is one tough nut to crack.
I didn't ask what you love. I asked what you want.
Raindrops pelt her rosy cheeks and slide down to her chin. She makes no move to wipe them away. My instinct is to take her arm and guide her somewhere warm and safe, but I'm pretty sure I'll be missing a limb if I do that. Can we talk?
We have nothing to discuss.
What about your hasty departure the other day? You didn't allow me to explain why I'm the perfect candidate for your baby-making scheme.
Baby-making scheme?
She repeats, frowning. I'm guessing those were not the right words because it looks like her mood just took a turn for the worse. You know.
Yes, I do know,
she says, interrupting.
And what I know, I don't care for. The answer is no. I will not have you co-parent a child with me.
Stepping around me, she keeps walking and I keep pace. Why not?
For obvious reasons, which are too numerous to list.
The rain comes down harder. We're both drenched to the bone. The porcupine, however, makes no attempt to seek cover. Give me a chance to change your mind. She weaves through the umbrella-armed crowd easily. I almost knock over a teenage boy in my effort to stay with her. Turns out she's surprisingly nimble, which bodes well for my kid's athletic prowess. The boy smiles when he realizes you almost knocked the teeth out of his head. We're on the move again before he can ask for an autograph. Stella! She finally stops at the top of the subway entrance. Maybe it's the desperation in my voice. Maybe she's tired of running from me and is ready to negotiate. Either way, I may have scored a point. At least I sure as shit hope so. Turning slowly, she faces me with mistrust and irritation in her big eyes.
Look, Wilder. This is a kid we're talking about. Not a puppy you can drop off at the pound once the novelty wears off. We're talking 17 years plus of fevers and dentist appointments and piano recitals and ballet lessons. And if I wanted an absentee father, I'd go to a sperm bank. I'm not gambling with my kid's future on you. Not on a guy that can barely remember to show up for an appointment and looks like he's not done fucking around and partying hard.
A flare of anger kicks up, and it's a big one. It shoots right up my spine and gets my dander up. You got that backward, darling. I fuck hard and party around. The moment the words leave my lips, I want to call them back. I want to shout that I don't mean it, that I'm not that guy. But I can't because I'm trapped in my own personal hell. She gets me so dang angry I lose all capacity for rational thought and speech. Her face remains perfectly blank. This worries me even more. I can practically hear what she's thinking, and it ain't good. There's a sinking feeling in my gut and a heavy weight sitting on my chest, and for the first time in my adult life, I'm ashamed of myself. Raindrops catch on her lashes. She blinks rapidly and licks the water off her lips, expression stoic if she gets hit in the face.
Thanks for making this easy.
With that, she turns and glides down the subway steps, disappearing from sight, while I stand there trying to shake off the feeling that I just got pancaked by a 300-pound offensive lineman.
Chapter 6. Stella.
How was your meeting? You didn't say.
The question jumpstarts an immediate playback of the whole dreadful experience. That's because I'm trying to forget it ever happened. I look up from my computer screen at the man doing the asking, a thick head of white hair that would make anybody envious, and a tan recently acquired in St. Bart. Leaning against the doorframe with his hands neatly tucked into his navy pinstriped suit pants, Ira warmly smiles back at me, though it must be said the smile is edged with cynicism. As if the joke's on you and you just don't know it yet. In this case, he's absolutely right. The joke is on me. As soon as I jumped on the Line 2 subway train to 14th Street, I took out my phone and sent Ethan a text. This is how that went. Me. Thanks for giving your friend my work address. What were you thinking? Red-faced, angry horns emoji. Ethan.
He's worse than a hungry dog with a bone when he wants something.
Cute dog emoji. Me. And this is what you call a man of great character? Poop emoji, eye roll emoji. Ethan.
He is. Thumbs up emoji.
Me. I have yet to see any evidence, counselor. Ethan.
Give him a chance, and you will.
It is never going to happen.
That bad?
Ira Spitzberg is as close to a father as I've ever known, and one of a few men I trust implicitly. Goldman Sachs made me an offer right after graduation, and at the time, Ira was running the private banking division. I was one of a few people that stayed at the office later than he did. He took notice of the girl with big curly hair before I figured out how to use a flat iron, and the rest is history. Safely ensconced under his wing, he taught me everything he knew. Only later did I learn it had been a difficult time for him. His only son had recently died of an overdose, and he was struggling with depression. I became a worthy distraction, and 4 years later, when he decided to leave Goldman to open his own hedge fund, he made me an offer I couldn't refuse. A total bust. I don't know what Ethan was thinking. Walking into my corner office, he takes the seat on the opposite side of my desk and crosses his legs. How many times has Ira done that? Countless times. Most often it was to explain why he decided to pull out of a deal or dump a stock I thought was performing well and had more to go before a pullback. Without Ira guiding me every step of the way, I wouldn't be nearly as successful as I am. Confidence goes a long way in this kind of work. Knowing when to listen and take advice and not let your pride override logic takes you much farther.
So you're really doing this?
After the big decision, changes had to be made, starting with my current work schedule. Working 12-hour days is not conducive to having a personal life or being a good parent, so I stepped down as head trader, assuming less responsibility. At first, it was nerve-wracking. Now, getting out of work by 6 feels like I can breathe for the first time in my life. My mother was never home because she had no choice. As much as my brother and I needed her, we had to do without. I have a choice, however. I've dedicated my entire adult life to making enough money to feel safe, to be able to make choices not coerced by guilt or fear, and I finally have. I've made enough money to take care of myself, my child, and my family without breaking out in hives every time I make a purchase. Business has been good. Hypothetically, I never need to work another day in my life again. Not that I would ever do such a crazy thing. I need a life.
When does the clock start?
Not for a while. And I'll only be gone for 6 months. Besides, David is practically giddy with delight. I hate giving that little shit any satisfaction. It's a given that when a woman starts climbing the rungs of the boys' club, there is always one snot-nosed boy who tries to knock her down. David, Ira's nephew and an all-around douchebag that can't wait to take my place as head trader without doing a damn thing to earn it, has gladly assumed that role at Spitzberg & Co.
David is a little shit, and not nearly as good as you at anticipating a change in the market.
I won't disagree with you. A man suddenly appears in the open doorway of my office. A man I'd hoped never to lay eyes on again. Hair, a disheveled mop, scruff that tells me he hasn't shaved in a week, black eye turning an interesting shade of green. I blink and blink, but no, I'm not hallucinating.
Hi there,
he says, all chipper and smiley, like someone told him he won a trip to Disneyland. Or better yet, the best little whorehouse in Nevada. That's probably more his style. What are you doing here? And then it dawns on me. How did you get in here? Unannounced.
Jennifer.
Jessica.
That's what I said.
The nice lady at the front desk mentioned you were not currently in a meeting. I bet she did. Good to know any rapist murderer armed with a great smile can waltz right in. Outside the glass-paned wall of my office, I see every single head poking out from cubicles turned in our direction. Someone coughs, and I remember we are not alone. Wilder's eyes move to Ira, as do mine. With his chin resting between his thumb and index finger, Ira appears to be wearing a suspiciously sly smile. I know that smile, and it worries me. It's the same smile he wears when he gets a hunch about a stock.
"The bust?"
Ira remarks. I return a stiff smile in answer.
"Dane Wilder."
With an outstretched hand, the man in question walks into the office and heads straight for Ira, who, now standing, is more than happy to shake the trespasser's hand.
"I know who you are,"
Ira answers, with way too much amusement dancing in his voice.
"I'm a season ticket holder, 20 years now. I was there for the Hail Mary win over Green Bay. That fingertip catch was something special.
My first Super Bowl."
Wilder rejoins with a crooked grin. Insta-love alert. It's hard to watch, and quite frankly, disappointing. I never thought I'd see the day when Ira Spitzberg, financial genius, the leading authority on merger arbitrage, makes a fool of himself over a guy that plays with balls for a living. I cough loud enough to be heard in the hallway. Both men turn to me as if only now realizing I'm still in the room, intruding on their tête-à-tête. Dane Wilder, this is Ira Spitzberg, my boss. Heavy emphasis on the title, lest he think about jumping into round three of an argument. I'm assuming he has basic common decency. Big assumption on my part.
"Nice to meet you, Ira,"
the trespasser replies.
"I'll show you out, Wilder."
His attention swings back to me, his eyes bright with, dare I say, nervous anticipation.
"I came to take you to lunch."
After our last two encounters, he must be kidding. That or he's a glutton for punishment. "No," is my simple and immediate reply. I wouldn't let him take me to the ER if I was bleeding to death. I fuck hard. Those three words have been ringing in my head for days. It's driving me nuts. I can't seem to scrub them from my brain. Which is plain odd because I've heard things that would make a Marine drill sergeant blush. Working around type A men for nearly a decade, you pick up a few things. Jaw clenched, lips pressed in a straight line, Mr. Fuckhard is itching for another debate. It's plainly written on his face.
"I feel like you got the wrong impression of me, and I'd like to rectify that as soon as possible."
After a brief glance at Ira, he adds,
"There's a particularly delicate matter I need to discuss with you."
Delicate? Rectify? I sigh tiredly. At least he's eased off the corny accent. No.
No?
Yes, no. I mean, just no. No lunch, no discussion. Expression wavering between total dejection and disbelief, his reaction almost has me laughing. I don't think this guy has ever heard the word no before. An awkward quiet falls. Wilder makes no move to leave, standing in the doorway paralyzed by indecision. That pesky no word sure has him stumped.
"Maybe you should hear what the man has to say, Stell."
I shoot Ira a death glare, one straight out of the Mercedes Donovan playbook, which only makes him chuckle. Judas.
"I won't take much of your time."
And now I'm on the spot. As genuinely contrite as he is, and I can see that he is, this is a waste of time. There's absolutely no chance this guy qualifies as father material. It looks like he's not done growing up himself. He waits me out, his long fingers drumming against the black motorcycle helmet he's holding like he might actually be nervous. Yeah, right. He's playing me. I know the type. Balls to the wall, win at any cost, accustomed to getting what he wants, and can't bear to lose at anything. I've been around men like him my entire life. The financial world is rife with his type. Good thing I'm skilled in handling this brand of egomaniac. Except, I don't want to look like a total bitch in front of Ira, who seems to have fallen hard under this guy's spell. Embarrassing, if you ask me. Lunch, I say, with yet another heavy sigh and a glare.
Perfect.
Then he smiles. He smiles broadly. A very short one, I snap. Though at this point my demands seem petty and pointless, which only infuriates me more.
Anything you want.
I need to be back here in an hour.
We'll eat somewhere close.
Sauntering past the trespasser with a smug grin, Ira says,
"You two play nice,"
and walks out the door. I make a mental note to murder mentor/boss later. Snatching up my purse and my suit blazer off the back of my chair, I head for the door. "You're on the clock."
"After you, ma'am."
Why am I here? I glance around the lunch crowd at Harry's Cafe. Located a stone's throw from the famed Wall Street Bull, it's close enough to my office to make this lunch as short as possible. I catch a few people watching us, or more precisely, watching the man I'm having lunch with. The young waiter who came to take our drink order looked ready to swoon when he realized who was sitting in his section. I don't get all the hoopla. I really don't. So the man was good at throwing a ball or catching one? Whatever, the man was good with a ball. Did he cure cancer? No? Then why the hell would anyone want his autograph? Besides, I don't need a legendary anything. I need a dependable father for my child. Grimacing, he can't seem to get comfortable in the wooden chair. This guy is big, and the ceiling of this restaurant lower than usual. It's one of those basement-level restaurants, making him look like Gulliver on the island of Lilliput. His thighs alone could be described as twin ship masts. I can't believe the chair hasn't collapsed under his weight already. He twists left, then right. Finally, he turns it sideways and stretches out his long legs, parking his motorcycle boots next to the side of my chair. The lazy charmer persona he wears without effort is nowhere to be found.
"I would like you to reconsider me for..."
His eyes dart from the utensils he's busy rearranging to the table next to us, where a couple of suits keep glancing furtively in his direction.
"You know, as a potential baby daddy,"
he adds, turning down the volume of his deep, raspy voice by a couple of decibels. "Baby daddy," I repeat, my attention locked onto his hyper-focused gaze. "We're talking about having a child together, not something to be taken lightly. This isn't a joke."
"You think I don't know that?"
He sounds offended. Boo-hoo, cry me a river. "No," I answer, head shaking to drive home my point. His whole demeanor changes, takes the shape of determination mixed with a touch of resentment. A small vein pops up in between his brows. He runs a super-sized hand through his unruly hair and tugs on the ends. Before he can jump into the argument I can see brewing, I continue. "No, I don't. I'm not even sure you're capable of taking care of yourself." At my gesture to his eye, he frowns.
"Give me a chance. Get to know me before you say no for good."
He's serious. I would venture to say almost desperate to convince me. Not only does this make me suspicious, but also begs the question why. What reason could he possibly have to want a child with a stranger? One that he doesn't like and doesn't like him in return? I sit back, arms crossed. Why?
Why what?
Why do you want to have a baby with me? Why not get married and have one the conventional way? I'm sure there are plenty of women who would accommodate you, three in this restaurant alone by the looks of it. You may even have a couple of kids scattered around the country you're unaware of, Mr. Fuckhard. He didn't like that last jab, his eyes turning into slits, his lips pressing together tightly. I tip my head in the direction of the table near the door, where three women of childbearing years are foaming at the mouth as they undress him with their eyes. Following my line of sight, he spots them and exhales. His expression changes to troubled. Admittedly, I'm a little surprised. I would assume this is the kind of attention he welcomes. Give me one good reason why I should consider binding myself to you for the rest of my life. The silence continues, for enough time that I assume I'm not going to get an honest answer out of him.
My mother left us when I was 5.
His gaze moves down to the tabletop, to where his long fingers fiddle with the paper wrapper of his straw. I watch him flatten it against the wood, smooth out the wrinkles with the pads of his blunt fingers, his nails short and neat.
She took off with some carny that was headed out west. He filled her head with a bunch of nonsense that she wasn't meant to waste her beauty on a ranch. Happened again when I was 8. She called from Vegas begging for money for a bus ticket home. After that, she stayed put for 3 whole years. I was 15 the last time she left. For good, it turns out. By then, it was a relief. Always waiting for the other shoe to drop. If today was gonna be the day.
This is costing him to tell me. I can see it on his face, in his stiff posture, in the way the cords of muscles of his forearms flex while resting on the table. For reasons unknown, seeing him look so vulnerable makes me uncomfortable. A small pang of shame hits me.
Each time she left, a part of my father died. It was like the light went out of him. The only time I saw him shine was when he came to watch me play.
His face lifts and it's all in his hard eyes. The leftover pain. The work it took to overcome it. The determination.
Football gave me everything. A ticket out of sad town and my father back for 4 quarters on Sunday. I'll never get married. I don't believe in it.
His eyes briefly flicker away. He exhales. When they return to me, they're soft, a bit of hope restored.
But I want a kid, a son, hopefully, to share with him what I have with my dad.
I expected one of his obnoxious comebacks. I expected more callousness. I didn't expect him to bare his soul. His honesty, the one thing I didn't anticipate, gets under my skin and peels back the thick layer of resolve I thought I'd sufficiently shored up. And for the first time, I see what Ethan sees in this guy. I see potential.
I can promise you I will never shirk my responsibilities. I swear to you that I'll always be there for our kid.
He pauses. Laser focused, his gaze won't let mine go.
And my hunch is you're the reliable sort, too.
Every legitimate argument I had a minute ago seems trivial under the weight of his stare and the conviction behind his words. Okay, I say, half dazed, the words sliding out without thought.
Okay,
he repeats, sounding genuinely surprised. I'll give you a chance. We'll get to know each other, and then I'll decide. Don't make me regret it. No smile this time. Wilder's expression is serious like it never is.
I won't.
Chapter 7. Dane. I'm a man of action, not one to sit around and wait for things to happen. I go after what I want, and I go after it hard. So when I don't hear from Stella the following week after our lunch, I start to have doubts. Thoughts that say she was stringing me along only to get rid of me later. And hell would freeze over before I'd let that happen. It didn't take long to wear Ethan down. He gave me her cell number after I threatened to show up at her office every day until someone else gave it to me. After that, it was only a question of how long it would take to convince her to see the merits of choosing me. Me. Busy, or can you talk? Stella.
Who is this?
Me. The father of your child. Smiley face. Are you hungry? Stella.
No. And how did you get this number?
Me. I asked. Let's have lunch. Stella.
Ethan?
Me. He never stood a chance. Let's have lunch and you can get to know me better. Stella.
I'm working.
Dane, it's Saturday. Let's have lunch. I'll be at your place in 20 to pick you up. You said you would give me a chance. Stella.
How do you know where I live?
Me. No comment. Stella.
Fine.
20 minutes later, I'm waiting by my Harley when she walks through the doors of her building. She's in black jeans and a white t-shirt, hair pulled back painfully tight. She takes one long look at my bike and tilts her pretty head.
You expect me to get on that thing?
Okay, I guess that's out of the question. We'll take a cab.
Do you have a car? On the off chance I decide to shackle myself to you for the rest of my life?
When you choose me, win. And don't fret. They make the cutest little baby seats for bikes. I'm gonna get one custom made with a matching blue baby helmet. Staring seems to be her only reaction. Or I could put the baby seat in my Escalade. Crossing her arms, she glances down the street.
There's a good restaurant around the corner. Do you like Chinese?
A smile stretches across my face. It can't be helped. I seem to always want to smile around this one. And the more prickly she gets, the more it makes me smile. Chinese sounds great. We walk in silence all the way there. I get the impression she's uncomfortable around me, and that's the last thing I want her to be. Considering what happened the last time we saw each other after I spilled my guts, I was hoping she would loosen up a little, let her guard down. But that guard seems insurmountable right about now. I've never told that story before. As I sat there working up an argument, debating what to do, it was her eyes that made the choice for me. Her eyes convinced me she could be trusted. They're inherently open, reflecting a strength of character I've seldom seen, if ever, in a woman. I knew then that if I wanted her to take me seriously, I had to put my trust in her. Best decision I ever made. I walked away from that lunch feeling better than I had in years, the burden a little lighter, my future looking a little brighter. Strange, that. The restaurant is mostly empty. We sit in a booth in the back, far away from the curious stares fixed on us since we walked in. At 6'5", it's kind of hard to miss me. Meanwhile, my attention is 100% on the woman sitting across from me. She's trying to hide behind those ugly glasses again. I think that's what threw me off when we first met. She uses those things to distract. Slowly, those baby blues lift off the menu and take me in. A strange burning sensation grows in my chest. Feels like heartburn, yet I haven't eaten yet. I make a mental note to get a physical sometime this week.
Are you okay?
She asks with genuine concern.
Cute.
She's cute. What's with the glasses, Clark Kent? They're as big as your face. A dark eyebrow bumps up.
These happen to be Morgenthau Frederick's.
Morga what?
A designer. Not that it's any of your business.
I think it is my business if your faulty eyesight will earn my kid the name Frankie Four Eyes with his school buddies. Her full lips twitch, though she does a bang-up job of stopping the corners from lifting into the smile I see wanting to bust loose. To the untrained eye, she hasn't so much as batted an eyelash. I only notice it because I'm a fine-tuned machine when it comes to reading people. I've had to be, or wind up dead under defensive backs that want my head on a stick. I can't wait till you change into your Supergirl costume. I know I shouldn't antagonize her, and yet I can't help myself. It's beyond my control, meaning this woman makes me lose all control. No clue why. She sighs, her baby blues sliding back down to the menu, and I hide another grin behind mine.
Will the childish taunting cease, please?
Yes, ma'am. I scan the chicken dishes, trying to determine what to order, but I can't focus. My attention keeps drifting back to her, whereas she keeps studying that thing as if she's getting a PhD in Chinese cuisine.
And it's Wonder Woman.
Her brow wrinkles as if she's given my comment some serious consideration.
If I were to change into a costume, it would be Wonder Woman. I'm not a girl. Or is your eyesight faulty?
Sweet Jesus, I like this one. Elbows on the table, I lean in. Prove it. She finally looks up, tilts her head, and smirks.
I can see this conversation is going nowhere I want it to go.
Where do you want it to go?
On a topic relevant to my making a decision.
I'm a healthy male. I start marking the basics off on my digits. Age 35 and 2 months, Leo, which, FYI, makes me great in bed and fun to be around. This one earns me an immediate and exaggerated eye roll. I have no history of drug or alcohol abuse. I have diabetes on my mother's side, her dad, and heart issues on my father's. Great-granddad died at 40. I have perfect eyesight and a great singing voice, but only in the shower, so if you insist on hearing it, you'll have to join me there. She's back to blank staring. A full 60 seconds passes in silence.
Who does that work on? Really? Someone along the way had to have encouraged this behavior. I'd like to know which one of my gender committed this egregious act of stupidity so I can publicly shame her.
Biting back a grin, I glance at my menu. All of them, sweetheart. They all love it. Except you, of course.
Which brings me to my next question. STDs?
That's a weird one, but I've got nothing to hide. Clean as a virgin nun. Then I'm dead serious. I've always tagged and bagged it, mainly because I've always been terrified of knocking up some wannabe wag. It says a lot that I was always more concerned with getting one of those than an STD.
I highly doubt that, but moving on, the actual parenting stuff will leave for later, if I choose you.
When you choose me? Let's think positive. She pauses, her face telling me the heavy stuff is coming.
Are you sure about this? You just retired. That must be difficult. How do you know you won't feel differently a year from now after the dust has settled? And do you have any experience with kids? How do you know you'll like them?
Man up.
Excuse me?
The name of the camp for at-risk boys I started. It runs every August at a farm upstate. The family that owns it rescues animals and grows organics. They spend the month caring for the animals, learning about sustainable farming. Some of these kids have never eaten a fresh vegetable. The tension she often carries on her face eases. A small change in her opinion of me has occurred. The walls coming down some. I breathe a sigh of relief.
That's really great.
I shrug and take a swig of my beer. The pat on the back doesn't mean anything to me. I do it for the boys. For the shit luck most of them have had. A few weeks of breathing room from the burdens of their lives isn't much, but it's better than nothing. The Dane Wilder Foundation does good.
Can we cut the hillbilly crap? I know you graduated summa cum laude.
Yes, ma'am. It makes me uncomfortable talking about myself. The real stuff, that is. She doesn't need to know that, though. She probably wouldn't believe it if I told her anyway. What about you? Why a kid with no husband? I thought that's what all little girls dream about. Her gaze slides to the paper napkin she's shredding into a million pieces.
Not this little girl.
She's got her dander up. I can tell by the sharp reply.
I've always wanted kids. I had plans to work hard for a couple more years before doing this, but, you know, plans change.
Any reason?
Yeah, because time is a precious commodity, and I don't want to waste any more of it.
I sense a deeper meaning somewhere in there, but I don't push. Not when she's finally starting to let her guard down around me. And you've never wanted to do this before? With somebody you loved? She studies me before answering, taking the time to suss out my intentions, no doubt.
No, I haven't. The one person I was in a relationship with wanted to get married, and I didn't.
Her words hit home. It's like staring at a mirror image of myself. Before my thoughts get a chance to drift down that road, she says,
What about you? Nobody you love to do this with?
I've never been in love. She gives me a look that says she doesn't believe me.
Come on, all kidding aside.
I'm serious. Her face shifts from suspicion to disbelief to tentative acceptance.
You've never been in love?
No.
Never?
Not once.
You're 35, and you've never, not even in junior high, been in love.
It's no longer a question. She's finally accepting it as a fact. I shrug. I guess I've gotten lucky. A bunch of silence happens, which tells me I may have overplayed my hand.
What about dating?
She says with a hard stare. Practically willing me to be bad. I'm game if you are. She blinks and blinks, then her eyes narrow.
I wouldn't want my child exposed to a string of your victims.
The smile falls right off my face. What the hell is she implying? Contrary to popular opinion, I don't chase women. Never had to when so many chase me. They're not victims if they're begging for it. Sitting back, she crosses her arms.
This isn't helping your cause.
Can I be honest? I lean forward, invading as much of her space as possible. Not for the first time, I'm grateful for my size.
By all means.
You make me crazy. I'm on my heels every time we speak. I don't say shit, excuse me. I don't say things like that, but I get around you and it's like I'm not myself. I react without thinking. We both fall silent. I'm a dead man walking. By the look on her face, it's over for me. In my mind, I'm howling, pissed off at myself, pissed off at her.
I don't want any strange women around my child. That's a hard limit. And if, and it's a big if, I decide to do this with you, I will hold you to it or see you in court.
I blink, processing. Processing. She didn't give me the boot. Hot dang, I'm still in play. Also, I've come a long way when the words see you in court don't send me running out of the restaurant. I'm not going to pretend I'll be living like a monk, because that would be a lie. What I can do is promise that I will keep my personal business totally separate from my family business. And then it occurs to me that she may want a date as well. An ugly thought butts in. Some strange dude coming to pick her up, and my little boy crying after her as she walks out the door, the image so clear my stomach flips. There goes my appetite. The same rule applies to you. No weird dudes around my kid. She's surprised, eyes widening until they're impossibly big.
I would never.
A slender hand falls over her heart.
And dating isn't an option for me. Not for a long time.
My appetite comes storming back. Glad that's settled. Now, what's good here? I'm starving.
Chapter 8. Stella. 4! My friend yells as she swings her club. In the middle of an indoor driving range, I should clarify.
simulator golf ranges, the latest rage in Manhattan. In their defense, the gourmet comfort food and craft beer are nothing.